Hi, this is Farah Osbeck. Welcome back to Military Law and Life Matters, the podcast that arms you with knowledge so you don't become a victim of injustice. So we're back to the podcast series where I interview attorneys who focus primarily on the military community. Many are either former JAGs, military attorneys, or reservists. Not all of them, but one thing for sure is that they have a passion for helping the military community. And today I'm going to be speaking with Ms. Patricia Navarro. Now, Ms. Navarro, although she's actually not an attorney, she's an Army veteran herself, and she's a fierce advocate for veterans, and she helps them navigate the VA claims process. Ms. Navarro has been working for over 9 years with Mr. Barry Allen, who's a VA disability law attorney. And Ms. Navarro specializes specifically in veterans benefit claim appeals. And I talked to her today, and she actually has provided so many, when you listen to the podcast, so many useful tips on to veterans on how they actually file their claim, how to navigate their process, and actually gives very useful tips that you need to know when you're going to file your claim. So I really, if you're in the process of filing your VA claim or going to do that in the future, you should learn this now and not wait till the last minute. So I hope you find this interview interesting and stay tuned, and I'll introduce you to Patricia Navarro. Hi there, Patricia. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. I am so happy to have you join us today on the podcast. Thank you so much. And I know as a veteran yourself, you're a veteran of the Army, I know you have a passion for working with and helping veterans navigate the claims process or the claims appeal process when they file their claims for the VA. But I know today you specifically want to talk and share with the military member veterans specifically. You want to focus on giving them some tips on navigating that initial process of filing their claims, things you've learned over your, I know you've been doing this for like over 9 years or so. So I just want to start out by saying, Patricia, I know when I work with clients, I always say to them, okay, if you're going to file an appeal or an application to get, you know, upgrade your discharge, et cetera, you need to get your military record. So I'm assuming there's something similar you tell people you're helping as it pertains to the VA claim process. Is that true? Is there something you tell them initially about getting their records or things like that?
Yes, Farah. Thanks for having me today. Absolutely. So when a veteran decides to put in a disability claim or even an education claim, any type of claim with the VA, the first thing they should do is gather their records. There are specific forms the VA likes to use, and not just the VA, but other government agencies will need in order to obtain those records. And I'd like to discuss some of those today, Farah.
Okay, please do. Tell us what are those records they need to get.
Thanks. Well, the first record we're going to discuss is the standard form 180 or SF-180. That can be found at opm.gov, which is the Office of Personnel Management. And that form is used to obtain all military enlistment records, separation records, the entire record of somebody's military service, basically all their education. And oftentimes it will include all of their service treatment records. Another form people would want to use to gather their records, especially if they've already gone to the VA, would be a 10-5345, which is a request for medical records from a veteran's facility. It's important to get to request these records from any type of facility that you've been in. And oftentimes we'll request these records from the Personnel Records Center, as well as the Branch Human Resources Center, respective of the veteran. For example, if we have Air Force veterans, we request those from the Air Force Command Center, the Air Force Personnel Center. And the U.S. Army Human Resource Command also has a form. You can send the SF-180 to that agency as well. The Navy has the Navy Personnel Command. And the Marines also has the Marine Corps Forces Reserve, the But their records, the SF-80 also goes to the personnel command of the Navy. So that's where you need to get started.
Okay. Yeah. And I think actually I've looked at that SF form 180. So basically on one of the pages, I think it's based on your year of discharge. It shows where to get your personnel records and then where to get your medical type records. Is that, so that's what you're referring to, those addresses on that form, or is it something different?
Yes, the addresses are on the form. And it's important to note that even on the form, sometimes it'll say to just send your request to the national, the NPRC, National Personnel Records Center. But if you've also had extensive medical care while you were in service, it's beneficial to also send it to the respective branch personnel command. And that's because we have found that not all of the records show up in the NPRC. Also, back in, I believe it was the early 70s, the NPRC had a huge fire in their St. Louis facility, which they lost records of thousands of veterans. So it's really important to not only send it to the NPRC as directed on the form, but also to the respective branch command that is also on the SF-180.
Okay. Is there anywhere else they should be sending anything to get any records, or are those pretty much the places?
Those are pretty much the places, and that's the main form that you will get started with to obtain your records for any veteran. But if they've already started their process and they've already gone to the VA for medical care, sometimes some veterans come out and before they start their disability claim, they are seen at a VA medical center. So it's important to submit a 10-5345 to any VA medical centers that you have been treated or the veteran has been treated at.
Okay. Okay. That's really good. I know when we were talking earlier, you had said like veterans really, you know, they just need to get, it's very important to get the records from all these resources, not just send it to the one place on, you know, that's listed OPM. You have to send it everywhere because some places will have your records and some may, and don't just assume it's going to be all at the records archives, correct? So that's what you were talking about when you said they need to like use all the avenues and get, because those records are what's going to make or break their claim. I'm assuming they have to have
exactly.
Like the right. So, okay. Well, that's,
yeah,
great,
for example, I worked on a case recently where it was denied due to the VA saying that they collected, medical records from a VA medical center. However, they did not collect the records for this specific veteran from the satellite clinics. And there were records missing. And because those records were missing, the claim was denied. So even though that's the VA's job to make sure they have the records, it's in the same system, the VA and the VA medical system, you would think would have that type of a relationship or computer system that they could have access to the records, but they do not. And so it's also important to note that not just make sure that in the top of the 10-5345, it's going to, there's an area that says which medical facility. It's important to put the medical facility that you went to and also include any satellite clinics or any community-based outpatient clinics that the VA has. That way that forces the VA to check with those facilities and gather those records as well.
Wow, that's fascinating. So then once this veteran got their satellite clinic records, I'm sure that gave him some information to help perhaps win that claim.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's,
and it shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It shouldn't have been what?
It shouldn't have been that way, but unfortunately it is.
Yeah. And one day, hopefully, you know, with technology, I'm sure they're working on making it seamless where it's like you can, I mean, really, it should be that you just go on a website, click something, and then all your records are down. Like that's how ideally it maybe will be. It's just, I'm sure.
Well, you can actually, you know what? I'm so sorry. Yes. I meant to mention that you can do that through va.gov. If you are already signed up through the va.gov system, you can obtain your medical records from that system. However, when you are working on a claim for disability, it is very important, in addition to checking what records are in that system, there sometimes are lags in uploading And we have found that not very many veterans have access to that system, especially right now during the pandemic. Things changed to where you didn't, I guess more recently, you don't have to go into the VA to show proof of identification in order to get the credentials you need to get online to get your records. But we have found that it is a minority of veterans that we work with have access to those systems.
I see. Okay. Huh. Yeah, I know there's so many different DOD, different websites you need. I always wish there was like one website for everything. Like there's one to check your pay things on one record. There's one
right,
for your
exactly.
medical. The medical one is pretty cool, actually. That's pretty easy to use when you're just like regular medical appointments. If you go to a
yes.
military hospital and then your prescription. So anyway, I'm going off track here, but I'm really into efficiency and I really hope, you know, I'm sure, as you said, they have that one website where it's just easy because it's just really a pain when you're going to like 10 different websites, but I'm not really a tech guru, so I shouldn't really talk about this, but I'm assuming they have the technology to do that. We can like go up to, you know, the international, I always say that I go international station. We've been to the moon, but you know,
right.
certain other things we can't do, but that's great advice. So get records from everywhere. So there's nothing missing. So you can justify substantiate your claim. Okay. So Patricia, the next thing I wanted to ask you, when I don't do VA issues or anything, I haven't dealt with that really, not an expert in that area, but I know in working with discharge upgrade clients that I used to do that. I don't do that anymore, but I reviewed VA records and people substantiating, for example, PTSD to upgrade their discharge, et cetera. And I've seen something called a disability benefit questionnaire. I think like DBQ.
Yes.
And basically, what is that?
So the disability benefits questionnaire is really a guide for the examining physician to review and rate the disability if it's service-connected or is connected to service-connected or not. So it's basically a paper that tells the doctor everything they have to look for. I recently, actually, just shortly before this podcast, heard and had read, it's the second time I heard it, so I'm putting a little more weight into it, that the VA is trying to have the DBQs taken down, taken offline, because it is giving veterans the the benefit, more of a benefit. A lot of times, we're taught in the military, you know, suck it up and drive on, suck it up and move on, you know, take your ibuprofen, drink your water, move on. And we, of course, we've made this choice to commit to selfless service and we're there and in a different mindset. However, it's very important to realize that there is a lot of wear and tear, physical and mental, depending on where you are, what situations you're in, that happen in the military. And these disability benefit questionnaires allow the doctors to see how to evaluate the issue that you are claiming a disability for. And the reason that we like our clients to review them or our veterans to review them, and the reason I feel it should be done before you go to your first compensation and pension exam is because you are able to sometimes put into words different symptoms, different situations you may be experiencing into the way that it needs to be worded for the doctor to understand. And I say that because the VA is very strict. Everything has to be on an exact form. Everything has to be worded in a specific manner by the regulation, or it's not, it's really difficult to get it granted. And so there is a website, it's on the va.gov site while it's still up. And these DBQs cover all the different systems, cardiovascular, dental and oral, dermatologists. So if you have, for example, have scars from shrapnel fire, you would want to look at the DBQ for scars under dermatological, and that would help you maybe understand your own issues and how the VA rates them. And that's for almost every issue that is claimable in the CFR or the Code of Federal Regulation that the military uses to rate the service-connected disabilities. And that website is benefits.va.gov/compensation/DBQ_public_DBQs.ASP. And I'll send that to you, Farah, so you can put it up in the notes for the podcast.
Yeah, that would be great. Actually, I was writing down the, but it would be helpful. Yeah, at some point, I'll put it on the show notes so people can just click on it. You know, they can click on the website. That's great. So for what you're saying is, is the VA saying, well, we don't want veterans to get these questionnaires because it's going to give them some unfair advantage of looking at these different medical issues and that they will then try to come up, I mean, I don't know, try to like somehow game the system? Is that what they're thinking?
I haven't, so like I said, I've just heard this before. So that's what I'm thinking. And they are still up here. I was afraid that they were going to be gone and I was going to have to remove that part of our discussion, but they are still up here. And it's usually for the doctor to complete. Now, I know that the regulation for granting a claim in the standard is that a medical professional expert in whatever system is being evaluated must determine that the injury or illness is at least as likely as not to have been caused by the military service. They're supposed to give the benefit of doubt 51% to the veteran. And I believe that what you just said is exactly the reason they want to take the DBQs off of the offline, off the VA.gov site. They do not want the benefits, the veterans to have the upper hand in that situation. So it's really important to, I wanted to follow up also with the DBQ in addition. It's important to document for the veterans to document everything they're going through, all of their symptoms. By the time they get to the compensation and pension exam, it could be a couple months out. It could be a couple weeks out. The VA is getting a lot better, and I think there's like a 3-week turnaround right now on compensation and pension exams in a lot of places. So it is really important to do your homework in the sense of if you make sure that you are your best advocate. If you aren't, make sure that you have a loved one who can help you review the disability benefits questionnaire, document what you're going through, and be prepared with these things to attend the compensation and pension exam.
Okay. So basically, yeah, well, hopefully it's a rumor. We'll say, well, maybe it's not, but hopefully, but anyway, they're still there. So everyone listening, download that. And if not, guess what? There's people like Patricia and other people who have been helping veterans with this for a long time who have a copy of it. Doesn't make sense. I mean, because, you know, like when people are doing cases, we have the benefit of looking at the laws and say, this is what's required. So, I mean, I don't know from that aspect, although I really shouldn't give too much of my opinion because I'm not an expert in this area whatsoever. I've just seen the VA and, you know, I know the thing about that's like that 51%, right? Preponderance of evidence standard. Right. But honestly, it doesn't make sense to me that they would do that, but I don't know. We'll see. But there are people like Patricia that have these and you can download it. So now I know you've been referring to the compensation and pension exam. So when does that happen then? And and how does a veteran prepare for that medical exam?
Sure. So once a veteran realizes or determines that they have an injury or an illness that warrants that either manifested in or was caused by their military service, it's really important that they fill out a 526 EZ form that can be found on va.gov. That is the first step in filing a claim for disability with the VA. during that time, it's important, you know, if you haven't already gathered your records, and if you're, a lot of people, when they come out of the service, will bring a lot of records with them, but few people that come out of the service have all of their records, all of their service treatment records, all of their personnel records. So it's important to start gathering those, because the VA is going to need those records for evidence to show what, where this injury manifested or how it occurred in service. Once you get your file your claim and you request all your documentation, you can go ahead and download your DBQs. Download the DBQs for each issue that you have, because the VA is going to send you for a compensation and pension exam, which is a thorough exam by a VA medical professional of that field. Hopefully, which actually that brings up another point I hope to remember to touch on. So you're going to download your DBQs and prepare for your compensation and pension exam. Make sure that you write down how your disability or illness affects you at your worst. Make sure that you're aware. We always try to tough it out, and sometimes that's great. We can tough it out. And if you can, and your worst is, you know, I barely have problems maybe once or twice a month with this injury, then be honest about it. If you have problems with the injury every day, be honest about it. It's important to be honest and to be your own best advocate in that way to prepare for your compensation and pension exam. If you're married, have your spouse write a statement. Have them express what they witness, what they see you going through. If you're, or your children or a family member, a good friend, anything to corroborate your testimony as how your illness or injury either manifested or affects you on a daily basis. When you go to the compensation and pension exam, the doctor is going to try to put together all of your medical records, the evidence that you present yourself when you go into your compensation and pension exam. And by evidence, I mean your disability, what your symptoms are, your spouse or significant other or family member to say, yes, this my fit soldier was fine and, you know, was on a ruck march and then all of a sudden injured their leg and hasn't been the same since. Anything like that, it's important because sometimes some of that stuff is missing from our medical records. But when we go to the compensation and pension exam, you have the opportunity to discuss that with your medical provider, or you should.
Okay. Okay. So once you have that exam and then after that, does the veteran get a decision basically? Is that the next step?
Yes.
Okay.
So after you have your compensation and pension exam, that doctor will determine whether or not your injury or illness is service connected. And if they determine that it is service connected, what is the compensable rate of your injury or illness? That's where it's really important to have an accurate record of your symptoms. And to have as much documentation as you can to show what you've been going through with those symptoms.
Okay. Go ahead. I'll ask you.
If the doctor does not find service connection, the VA will send you, either way, whatever the doctor finds, the VA is going to send you a decision. If the doctor finds that your injuries and illnesses are not service connected, you will get a denial. If the doctor does find that it's service connected, they will determine based on the DBQ, what your rating should be based on their opinion, their experience, and the regulation. So that is the decision, and that is the outcome of the compensation and pension exam, and the application of the disability benefits.
Okay. Actually, I'm so glad you mentioned service connected, because that was going to be my question. You had mentioned that. And for people, I mean, maybe a lot of people know, but I mean, I know that term based on just, you know, again, with individuals who have PTSD, et cetera, and it's service connected. Can you just explain what's service connected?
Absolutely. If the VA has a long list, almost a pretty inclusive list of illnesses and injuries that could have either A, incurred or manifested in service, or B, were aggravated by service after you were accepted into service with that issue. Then after service, if you still have problems with that disability, I mean, with that injury or illness, you can apply for service connection for compensation for that illness or injury to say that, listen, this occurred while I was on duty. I got hit by shrapnel from mortar fire. I was in a combi accident in a convoy. There are numerous, of course, PTSD being a huge one for veterans who have served overseas in combat zones. Among other things, Gulf War syndrome. I was talking to somebody earlier today. There are a lot of illnesses that you either find out, you come back and you're like, hey, I didn't go into Afghanistan. I was fine when I got there, and now I'm back and I've got this rash all over my body every month. I've got stomach issues. I can't sleep because I have nightmares. Whatever the issue may be, that is the service connection. Is how is it connected to your service? How is it connected to your military service? How did it happen? Or I'm trying to think of an example that I have for a pre-existing condition that was aggravated by service.
Yeah. Could it be asthma, or
actually, I'm trying
you can't,
to,
I you know. Can't come in with asthma probably. Cause I once had a client who had asthma, then he recovered and he came in the service, and then, it came on again, his asthma. And he was being medically retired, actually, for the asthma, even though he had it as a kid. But then he recovered, and then it came back, you know, I don't know, after whatever, the PT or so. I don't know. But you explained, that was my question. So service connected is whatever happened during service. Or you might have had something that they let you in, right? They let you in the service, even exactly. With this thing they knew during your... I remember my initial medical exam. Oh my, it was somewhere in New Jersey. I remember when I came in, and it was really, I mean, it wasn't that long, but they had to do all these type of stuff to kind of see, you know, what your, I remember my only week was I had bad eyesight, but I think they waved it. I was so nearsighted. They waved my, I guess they're like, oh, she's a lawyer. We don't really, so those exams are important. Okay, so you answered that question, service-connected or aggravated by service. So that's the key. Otherwise, they're not going to, if you had it after, whatever condition you just developed after, they're not going to compensate you for that, basically, right? So that's what we're talking about.
If there is something occurred in service that can be linked to your issue, for example, we have a lot of veterans from the 70s. And this is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Camp Lejeune water, toxic water issue.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. I've heard of that. Definitely. A lot of people have mentioned that to me, Marines especially. Yeah.
So that is something that the Marines on that base were exposed to the toxic water, and the issues didn't manifest until many, many years later. Not only did it manifest in the service members, but a lot of their children as well. So that is one situation where there is compensation for an injury or an illness that occurred after service, but was still service connected because it was due to a situation or an environmental, in this case, an environmental toxicity that was on base that the Marines were exposed to over a period of time. And they weren't sick at that time, but they're sick now.
Got it. Okay. So that's what you're explaining, that it might be something that you don't discover until maybe 10, 20 years down the line, or people don't even know about it, right? Until
exactly.
then, right? They don't even know, like mm-hmm. they feel lousy, but they don't know what it is. And then they go to the doctors and they talk to other fellow veterans and they're like, oh yeah, this. So yeah, very interesting. Wow. So that's
another one that I want to discuss, because you just, hit on something, is the asbestos. A lot of the Navy ships before, I think 1972 a lot of the sailors were exposed to a lot of asbestos, and that can manifest 40, 50 years later. So that's something, another thing that people have to be on the lookout for. If they exhibit symptoms and the conditions are correct, then it's just something to think about. Asbestos poisoning is not something that we deal with today, right?
Yeah,
it was something that in the 80s, I remember in the 80s, it was, everybody was talking about black lung and all of these issues with asbestos. But we didn't know then that now we know that it doesn't sometimes even manifest until 40 to 50 years later. So that's why another reason it's important to gather your records. If something should happen to you in as you age, your family will be able to understand, or will be able to at least help the doctor give you the treatment you need if they know where things like that manifested.
Okay. That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. It's not only like, oh, you just had this right when you were getting out. It can
exactly.
happen later. Yeah. Okay. So so after all this, the veteran files a claim. What if the VA says no, denied? What recourse does the veteran have at that point?
Okay, sure. So once you get, the veteran gets the decision, if the decision is a denial, the veteran has 1 year from the date of the cover letter to appeal that denial. Right now, depending on what type of denial the veteran chooses to file, for example, if they do not have any additional evidence, then that would be one type of an appeal. And that would have one type of form. I don't really want to go into that too much, because I don't want to overwhelm people with all these form numbers when they haven't even gotten there yet. However, I will send you the links, and you can put the links to the to different types of notices of disagreement mm-hmm. In the show notes. So
okay.
There are different types of appeal. There's a substantive appeal. If you have more evidence and you want to submit that evidence, you have a year to do that. A lot of people will... That's, to be honest, a lot of people do not start gathering their records until they get a denial. And that's why it's important to do this podcast, to help people to gather their records early. Now, you won't only want to appeal a denial. Maybe you get a veteran gets an award and the VA grants them their disability service connection for their disability. But the VA only gives them 0% compensation, because they say, yeah, you have this, but it doesn't bother you, so we don't need to compensate you for it. That would also be appealable. The veteran would also need to substantiate why they feel they need a higher rating, or if they have the medical records to prove, no, what are you talking about? I go to the doctor every month for this, and the doctor says I have pain. And, you know, so it's really important to gather those records, but to also pay attention, if you are granted a service connection award, to what that rating is. And if you feel that that rating is not adequate for the injury or illness that you were rated for, you'll want to appeal that as well. And you will have, with any regular rating decision from the VA, you have 1 year from the date on the cover letter to appeal. But it's better not to put it off. It's better to try to appeal it as soon as possible. And that's understandable if you have to gather more evidence, more medical records, whatever needs to be done to bolster that appeal. But you really have 1 year. After that, after you appeal, then the VA will send it to another rater, what is called a decision review officer. And that person will review your claim, will review all the evidence you submitted, will review the compensation and pension exam, and could possibly reach out to you to interview you or to ask you questions if they're missing any information. So the appeals process is really important for the veteran should they not be granted what they feel they need in or want or what is appropriate in the original decision.
Okay. So who can anyone help the veteran to do this, or do they do it themselves? Like, how do they file that appeal?
Thanks, Farah. I'm glad you asked. There are lots of representatives to help file appeals. However, if the veteran feels the veteran doesn't need to have help unless the veteran feels overwhelmed with the process. If the veteran feels overwhelmed with the process, there are many veteran service organizations that help veterans. They can be found at any, almost in any town in America now. In the VSOs are in every VA medical center, every clinic. They often have VSOs in colleges, community colleges nowadays. There is the National Organization of Veterans Advocates, which has members that are accredited and law firms that are accredited. We actually belong to the National Organization of Veterans Advocates. And you can always just call the VA. There are other organizations such as the Disabled American Veterans, the Veterans of Foreign Wars. They all have representatives that can help fill out the appeal process. Usually, accredited representatives that are not part of a veteran service organization will charge their attorneys and accredited representatives who have gone to school to specialize in the VA process. And a lot of the VSOs also, they are educated together. The NOVA and the National Organization of Veterans Advocates and VSOs often work together and work with the VA to make sure that veterans have representation as they wish. However, if a veteran has a spouse who is a really good advocate, if a veteran has a family member or a very trusted friend who is also a good advocate, they could equally help as well. A lot of the information that I went over today can be found on either the va.gov website or just in Google. If you Google veterans benefits, there are pages of information from different accredited representatives that will come up. I would personally recommend that people start with va.gov and go from there. And if things become overwhelming or they just see that they're really not getting anywhere in the process, then at that point, they may want to consider getting in touch with a representative.
Okay. And that's not like, so that's what you do, right? You work with a law firm that helps veterans in the appeal because you can't really get involved in the initial claim process only with appealing. Is that correct, Patricia?
That is correct. I do. I do volunteer work as well, where I do send the initial forms and initial documents to veterans so they can at least get started. And I work as my passion, my passion job.
Yeah, it's obvious. It's your passion.
Yes, is supporting veterans in this process.
Okay, so if someone says, I don't want to deal with this, I don't have a family member who could advocate, I just want someone to help me because I know I have a service connected condition, I have all the records, here it is, please help me do this. I know I don't have the time or energy or whatever. They would reach out to someone like your firm or others who do this. Or again, these other, you've listed a lot of resources, but that, maybe a VSO even can help. And are VSOs on military bases? I could have sworn when I was at my last duty base, there was a VSO there. I'm not positive.
I believe they are at all military bases as well. You have to forgive me because I deal with very few still on duty, separating service members that are, you know, in the process. It's usually, so I often forget, yes, there are VSOs on the military bases as well. I often don't deal with people until they get to the point that they say, to heck with this, I can't deal with this. They go on NOVA.org and send us a message and we go from there. So I tend to forget that, yes, there are a lot of active duty service members that are dealing with the VA process as they come off of active duty. And in dealing with the VA, the process is still the same.
Okay. And the only reason I thought of that is when I was retired, you know, when military men are retiring or separating, I was retiring and we had a chat, we had to go to this thing called TAPS. I don't know if it's called, it was like a,
it is. It's the same in the Army.
Yeah, I don't know if it was two. It was a long, like, it might have been 1 week, but that was a long time. I had a busy job and I had to get, like, for a week, go to this, like, but it was very helpful. It was like an all day thing for 5 days, maybe more. I don't remember, but it was at least a week where they told you all the things you needed to do. And one thing on the checklist was like, go to the VA, something with the VA. And there was someone on the base I was at. And I was pretty healthy and I didn't think I have any issues, but they always said, you got to like, just fill this thing out, have them look at your records and write down everything. Cause you don't know, God knows, like 20, like you said, 30 years later, you end up with something. It needs to be documented. Exactly. So I went to that VS. So I just gave them my medical records. I think they filled out some paper. I don't even remember what it might've been. Could it have been that 10-5345 you're talking about or not? I don't know. They filed something for me. Then I had to go to the VA, like in Washington, D.C., that like I've never, and I had to, then I met with like this doctor who looked at it and said, oh, there's nothing wrong with you, basically, which I was happy, you know, I'm happy that there was nothing wrong with me. And I wasn't trying to, I mean, I wasn't like, I just did it because they said I need to document this. So,
right. Absolutely.
But that's important, right? I mean, I want to
that
stress
is important.
To people. Because I did it because they told me to, like, it was on the checklist. And I said, okay, let me just do it, even though I feel perfectly fine. And I did it. And then nothing came of it. But if I ever, God forbid, end up with something, right?
Exactly.
It'll be whatever in my records, whatever I might have complained to the doctor about like 20 years ago. So is that something that you would stress to people listening if they're active duty that they should do that, right? Because I did it, even though they said you're fine. I still did that process. I'm not sure what it was. He filled that, honestly, the VS. So he filled it out for me. I didn't even question it.
I don't know what he filled out for you either.
Okay.
And I didn't have that experience. However, they did tell us to write down any issues. And of course, in our exit medical exam, they ask you, you know, all of these questions, and then they try to compare it side by side to your entrance exam and how has your health changed. At least that was my experience.
Okay.
And I did not have, when I met with the veterans representative, that's what it was. It was, what are the issues you're having now? What is on your exit exam compared to your entrance exam, you know, is Gesundheit.
Thank you.
I'm not sure, but and I'm sure that was so long ago. Oh my gosh, that was 20 years ago. I'm sure the process has changed.
Yeah. Okay. But would you agree? So one thing one of the things, I mean, I got so much out of this, but one of the things is, number one, you need to get all those, you know, the records, as you said, and we're going to put links for all the places you can get it. You need to get them, like,
absolutely,
right away before you get a deny. You want to get, cause you need them. I would think you need them for your claim. And then, another thing is, you need to like document everything, even when you're in the military. Document. Some people don't want to go to the doctor because they're afraid it's going to affect them in terms of, oh, they might separate me. So that's like problematic, but problematic that they're not getting help is what I meant, really, because
yes,
if they
the
do
culture,
need help, yeah,
is,
yeah, yeah. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, but I mean, I think the military is trying to definitely help, you know, say,
well, I agree.
Oh my goodness. I just saw it was really, I don't remember, one of the Air Force, I forget which one of those military publications, I don't remember which service it was, but it was like a 4-star general or something. I think it was Air Force, actually, like showing his calendar that he went to like mental health. Like, I don't think they call it mental health, behavioral.
Oh yeah.
Whatever.
Behavioral.
Did you, yeah, I forget what the term, and I don't mean to make light of it, but they have different
no,
terms,
it's not.
Right?
It's
just
exactly.
A different terminology and I don't know what it's called, but I thought that was so cool. Like saying, look, I have he was basically trying to send an example. Like if you need to discuss issues, like don't look, I'm a four, I think he was a 4-star general. I wish I remember.
I remember reading
it was
about
recent.
That. Yeah.
It was like
yeah,
2 weeks
it was.
Ago. And I thought, how neat is this? Because, you know, not, you sharing like personal vulnerability, but showing like, look, you should get help. So I thought that was really good. But getting back to, Yeah, I think you just touched on all the important things, gave great tips for people listening on what they need to do, and they really should do it and get that exam like I did, whatever that exam, I don't
Yeah.
know, but go to the VA and get your medical exam and, you know, go to the VSO maybe on the base initially, and they'll help you do that and get all your records. Is there anything else you'd like to share? You get given such great tips for people listening on this whole VA process. Any last thing you want to share that we haven't covered?
I know I did say this earlier, every veteran is their own best advocate. And I just want to reiterate, as you said, document, 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 and obtain your documentation from your military service. Obtain your medical records. If you go to a private physician, I didn't say this earlier, but should you go to a private physician and get treated for any of the issues, make sure you get those records as well. The VA is not going, they will ask you and you will be able to submit the information and sign a waiver in order for the VA to obtain those records. But if you can get them, it would be beneficial to get them yourself as well.
Okay.
But I think that's about it.
Wow, you covered a lot. And I so appreciate on behalf of all veterans listening or active duty members who are in the process of maybe separating, retiring, such
yes,
good
I'm
information.
Sorry for leaving them out so much.
No. I mean, it's mostly veterans that really do this, really. I've never had, I don't deal with VA, but I've, you know, it's usually if they call me anyway, it's veterans. So, but active
right.
duty because they're separating and they're preparing.
Exactly.
Right?
And
so,
it's an initial portion of the claim, right?
Yeah. So, Patricia, thank you so much for everything you shared, all your great tips, and we'll put
thank
those
you for
links
having me,
on
Kat.
There. Yeah, thank you very much, and I look forward to talking to you again. Until next time, all the best to you, Patricia.
Thanks, you too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ms. Patricia Navarro. She is an Army veteran who is certainly very passionate with helping her fellow veterans, giving them tips and information when they're filing their claim. And she actually helps veterans through the law firm she works with when the veteran is filing their appeal. So she's got quite a bit of experience, over 9 years of experience. And she gave a lot of good tips on things you really should be aware of when you're initially filing that claim. So I hope you have a chance to listen to that and go back to listen to it and look at the links she provided as far as forms you need. And, you know, regardless of the issue, as I've been saying, if you do have a legal issue, it's really important to get an expert opinion from someone who, you know, has experience with a difficult legal issue you're facing in your life. Because if you consult with an attorney or someone who has like expertise, they will give you insight into the legal issue, come up with a strategic plan on how to resolve the matter. Because really ignoring a problem is not going to make it go away. You really need to deal with it head on. And sometimes really, as we've, you know, heard an attorneys discuss, and I believe this, sometimes you will come to this resolution that you're not going to confront the problem. You're based on whatever, you're not going to take it to court. You're not going to file an appeal. I mean, it just depends on the facts. So, but at least you'll have closure. I mean, I talk to people who have been mulling around about, you know, filing an upgrade for years. I mean, 10 years sometimes. Sometimes they really can't, they don't, because it's just difficult to think about. But it's better to really confront the issue and really don't procrastinate. So that's my advice. Really get some closure on the issue, deal with it. And, you know, either way, you're either going to move forward or get it out of your mind so it's not cluttering your head. So I, you know, before I sign off, I'd like to ask you to please share the podcast with people who may benefit. Please like it on iTunes. If you want, you could do a short review on it. It, you know, and then if you don't have time for that, please give it 5 stars if you find it helpful, because that'll make more people aware of it. So I really hope you get a chance to do that. And as I always say, please never, ever give up, because there is always hope. Thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you next time.